Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 19, delivered on April 6th.
We are actually coming up on the end of the course, so celebrate that. We have less than a month left. Your final exam is listed on the, is listed in the overview. It is on Monday from 5:30 to 7:30, I think it is, and it will be a VeggieNet final. You will just come online and jump in. Matter of fact, you don't really even need to come online with Zoom. All you have to do, the exam will open at 5:25 and it will run until 7:50, and you'll have a window in there of exactly 2 hours. No, 5:25 to 7:35. Let me say that right. Okay, and then you come in there and you'll have exactly 120 minutes to complete the final there in RegiNet. You don't need to come to a Zoom session. However, if you do need something, I will be available for you to send email questions if you have some kind of a question to make sure that you're not completely alone and isolated doing this final, this odd way that we're doing it this semester. But one way or the other, that will be the end of it on May 4th, Monday, the first night of finals week. And then we'll be all good and it will be over. I should have all of the results compiled by Wednesday, so you'll know your final grade and all of that. So we're all good there, and we'll get started now. Tonight, stock and its valuation. This is sort of like a repetition in parts of things that I have said before, just to make sure that you understand that there is new material, so don't fall asleep when I go through the material that I've already mentioned before. Stock, common stock, represents ownership in a corporation. It has a residual claim to the cash flows and all of that. But I do go well beyond that in this pair of lectures tonight and Wednesday night. Those we get into valuation of stocks. I talk about the difference between intrinsic value and market value. We have a few methods for calculating the intrinsic value, and I'll show you those. There's nothing too deeply complicated about it, but we do press into service some of the things that we have learned before: present value, the capital asset pricing model from last week, and all that. But before we begin, let's have a look at the numbers and see what's been going on here in our world. Bear with me one quick second here. Exit full screen. And let me kill this. And get out of the launch. And, oh, I can just do this then. Come out here, and we're going to have a look.
Yeah.
Bear with me. I'll share a screen here with you. There we go. Share this screen. As you can see, this was a heck of an up day. I mean, this was a surge. Yes, it's probably still a dead cat bounce, but at the same time, the idea that every news story about increasing numbers of death and this being the worst day, the worst week of all, well, you see that a day like this kind of gives lie to those kinds of statements. Well, the markets are down because of the high death rates and all. Well, here we just had the president and his people say a couple of during the weekend, this will be the worst of the worst of the weeks, with deaths ranging up to 100 to 240,000. Well, the market comes in today and good times are rolling, a giant boost upward. And all of the markets were participating. There wasn't, really wasn't anything wrong. Oil even went up a little bit, even though there's some concerns about oil right now and firming up its price because of an argument between Saudi Arabia and Russia. But overall, the markets are up, even though there is such bad news coming out of this story of the coronavirus. So there's, you can't say, well, it's because of this every time. Is this a bull market coming up? Absolutely not. It's not a bull market coming up. This is just a surge up, probably a dead cat bounce, and that cat has an awful lot of bounce in it, and I don't know whether it's still got a little life in it, or if it's just kind of filling up with gas now, so it bounces higher like a bouncy ball. But as you can see, yeah, it's a bull day, but this is not a bull market. However, I don't want you to think that what I'm telling you is the absolute truth. There are others who disagree and would like to talk to you about this bull market. They think it is. So I brought a guest speaker here tonight to talk to you about a bull market. And disagreeing with me, this person, this speaker, wants to tell you that it is a bull market. Give me just 1 second here, okay? I'm a bull, and I believe that this is a bull market. There is no such thing as a bear market. There has never been a bear market, and there isn't going to be one now. I certainly don't want you to think that there is any reason not to invest in stocks right now. No reason whatsoever. There is no bear market. You can't believe in bears. In fact, I don't even think that bears even exist. Lou? No! Ah! No! Last time I'll have a guest speaker. Okay. Moving along now, stock valuation. Unfortunately, this was recorded last semester, whether it was the semester before that, and it got on Snapchat. Oh my God, it's so much fun. You guys can't share this though. Anyway, where are we? Okay, stock and the valuation. Common stock represents ownership in a corporation. It means that if I own a share of stock in a company, I own that much of the company. Now, that might, okay, if you've got a billion shares outstanding, if the company does, and I own one share, well, that means I have insignificant ownership, but I do have ownership. And that gives me the right as a shareholder to vote at company meetings, at the annual shareholders meeting. I get to have a vote for each of the board of directors. Excuse me. Now, the way that works is, okay, let's say that there's 1,000 shares outstanding. I own 100 of them. There are 5 directors. I get 100 votes for each seat on the board of directors. The president of the board, the treasurer, the secretary, the whatever, and members at large. So that gives me some voting ability to shape the course of the company in the future. Now, if I'm a minority shareholder, that means that the majority can control. And the insiders, if they have the majority, well, they're going to overrule the others every time. However, in some cases, I might actually have to kind of like, how would I put it? I could work in a coalition to get something accomplished. Okay, you have 200, I have 100, and that ugly ass guy over there, he has 300. Okay, so let's get together and let's take control of this company. Get rid of the old board of directors. Well, that's not always gonna happen. Probably not. The coalitions, you could not gain majority control. Insiders oftentimes have that advantage over the outsiders. However, it's worth it for us to keep it in mind. Also, some stock, you have the right to concentrate your votes on one. I have 100 shares for each of 5 seats. In some company charters, I could concentrate all of those 100 into one 500 vote. If there's one person that I want on the board, or someone I definitely don't want on the board, I'll find someone to replace him. I could concentrate my voting in some companies. It's that way in some companies. Now, oftentimes what will happen in a corporation is that they will have, not oftentimes, I shouldn't say this, the insiders control. Really, and in the United States, the rules are very different. There are laws that prevent the kind of relationships that we have in companies in the United States. Here, you could have a slate of directors, and they have their favorite management, and they all work together with the Wall Street boys, and no matter how screwed up the company gets, you can't get rid of those people because there's all the CEO can't be fired because he's buddies with the board of directors and they're all connected to Wall Street in some kind of way or to some powerful law firm or whatever, or accounting firm. So you have a great deal of difficulty changing the course of a company, even when there is clear evidence that the corporation is on the wrong track. Now, remember that the board of directors represents the body of the shareholders. The job of the board, as I said early in the semester, is to act as the agent. The board as an entity acts as an agent for the shareholders. And therefore, they are there to maximize the welfare of the shareholders. The board of directors will appoint the executive management, the chief executive officer, the chief financial officer, and maybe the chief marketing officer. And then there's another one these days that in my time we would never have talked about, the chief information officer. But these executives are hired and rewarded and all that by the board of directors at the behest in the interest of maximizing the wealth of the shareholders. And again, that doesn't always happen. And you really probably won't vote. You won't even vote for the board. Every year, the board of directors is going to send out a proxy statement. The proxy, you sign it, and it assigns your votes to these insiders. Sign the proxy statement, and we'll vote your shares. We'll act in your interest. So these proxies kind of take you off the hook of having any responsibility for the course and direction of the company. You can go to the annual shareholders meeting. You can vote. You can make a little bit of a speech, maybe. You have the right. But why would you bother? Sign a proxy and then go on your way. We'll handle it. We're the big boys. Unless you have a situation where there's a company that wants to take your company over in a hostile takeover, they might send you an alternate proxy, a counter proxy. Something like, you know as well as we do that this company is not performing well. Your stock is not going up in price. Your dividend is not growing. Vote for our slate of directors, and we will kick the executive management out the back door and put real competent people in. Vote us in. Now, typically what they'll be doing is, for their own part, they'll be buying shares of the stock up to a certain percentage. At some percentage, they have to disclose it through an SEC filing that, we have just acquired 5% and we're going for more. So they're getting their own votes to vote. And then they're trying to get you to give them your votes so that they can kick out. They'll replace the current board of directors and they'll then fire the executive management and put their own people in. That's a hostile takeover, one way. Okay, so, and then you will get a bidding war sometimes because the existing board of directors can deploy poison pills. They might start buying back the stock of the corporation to make its price go up, which makes it very expensive for this new corporation to step in and take over and buy the company's majority holding. They can start borrowing huge amounts of money and make the company toxic with debt, which might do it, which might scare off the Black Knight. They might, other things, they can do golden parachutes. If you fire our executives, each of them gets $50 million in a golden parachute when they are fired. Well, that would certainly disabuse some companies of, I'm not going to touch that one. There are lots and lots of different poison pills to try to disabuse a Black Knight. There is one also, interestingly enough, it's a White Knight strategy. Okay, you've got the board. I'm the hostile takeover company. I'm the Black Knight. We've got this little company over, this company over here, and I'm going to try to take it over. I'm going to try to get it. Okay. Then the little company says, "Oh, Yoo-hoo, I'm Mr. Big, huge company that we're friendly with. Why don't you bid for our stock and we'll become one with your company? As long as you promise to keep us on the board and all that kind of stuff, we'll be one with your company and you won't fire our executives and all that kind of." And so a White Knight could come in and start grabbing shares, pushing the price up, and that makes the Black Knight have to pay a higher price per share for a controlling interest in the company. And then the stock price is going up. So the shareholders who were previously unhappy about the performance of the company's stock, suddenly they say, wow, the stock's going up and the current board of directors is there, so we're happy with where we are. And then they deny the Black Knight the proxy so that they can get in there and take over. All kinds of craziness. It's wild. Now, one of the things that's interesting from the data, from real world experience, we find that in hostile takeovers, generally the stock of the victim, the company that gets taken over, benefits well. The stock of the Black Knight doesn't always do so well because essentially they've gotten bloodied in a battle that might take them a while to recover from. They will, in time. One of the things that the Black Knight will probably do is go in and they'll lay off workers, they'll consolidate operations, they'll get rid of some of the sacred cow products or services of the old company, and they'll get rid of the executive management, bring in fresh blood and all of that. Keep some people who were showing that they were the ones who were keeping the company alive while the idiots were screwing up. But there's all kinds of complications. It's sort of a fascinating game to watch. And just stay on the sidelines of it and just eat your popcorn and watch it, them slug it out. Because probably in one of these fights, your stock is going to go up in price. And you'll give your proxy to whoever is, makes you happiest in this. But at the same time, it can benefit the company that is being taken over in terms of the stock price. And in the long term, sometimes it benefits the company in material ways. The company is stronger once it has gotten rid of its dead wood that it just couldn't bring itself to do because of these relationships that couldn't be broken. The CEO, the CEO is pretty much a screw up, but I mean, we're all friends. We all know each other. We know each other's families and birthdays, and we're all connected in some way to the action on Wall Street. So, that needs to go. Now, as I said, in Europe, there are laws that keep some of the practices in the United States from getting, from happening, or getting out of hand. One interesting thing is that in Europe, there is a requirement that a board of directors have outside directors. In other words, directors on the board of directors who are not in any way connected to the company, in any way whatsoever. That helps to bring in this outside perspective instead of having this incestuous relationship that is so much a part of American corporate governance. In matter of fact, that's something I should mention here. A hot new field in finance is corporate governance. studying where it goes wrong, what can be brought to bear to improve it. Are there laws that need to be passed, like there are in Europe, to bring ours under control? Of course, you know how that's going to work in the United States. Best government is no government. We ain't going to have no government. This is free market capitalism. Well, okay, good for you. We do have a characteristic, unique kind of a society here in the United States. Lord knows we certainly do. But at the same time, some of these ideas in corporate governance are beginning to seep into corporate America itself. There are companies that actually bring in corporate governance specialists to help reshape the company's highest level of control downward. That's a good thing. That's a very good thing. As a matter of fact, here at Illinois State University, we have brought in corporate governance people into the Department of Finance. Their specialty is certainly timely. There are things that happen in any academic discipline that are like fads. They come in, and then a few years later, everyone's forgotten about it, and it washes away. I don't think that's going to be the case with this whole corporate governance thing. So it's worth it for you to know this. You are business professionals. You are going to be, at least in some way, near or at the executive level ranks during your professional life, somewhere in a corporation. And so it behooves you to know, here we are at the origins of some of the restructuring of the American corporate understanding of what constitutes good governance. It's not going to come easily, and it will not come for a long time. Some of it may never come because of the stranglehold that Wall Street has on so many corporations in the United States. The stranglehold that very powerful, wealthy people have on corporate America. So how far will corporate governance best practices go? Can't tell you. It won't go as far as Europe. I know that for sure. And you think, well, certainly we've got reformers who may win Senate seats, may win the presidency. So why? There it is right there. We're going to get some changes. Not really. You have to go really far to the left or to the right to get serious iconoclasts, because almost everyone anywhere off the far fringes, anyone even a little bit toward the middle, has already been compromised in one way or another by corporate donations, by relationships that we hire your kids or whatever. No, that's not good. We're not going to have the reforms like we did in the 1930s. And I'm actually going to bring up some of those as far as in the whole discussion on Wednesday of stocks and all that. For now, though, we need to have a model, something that will tell us the intrinsic value of a share of common stock. Because I am a professional trader and a professional in one of my other lives. Right now I am doing very well in a very bad market, and it's simply the old rule. There's no such thing as a bad market for the people who know what they're doing. But that being said, I do want to have an idea of the intrinsic value of a share of stock, because the market value is going to go up and down day to day. Traders are the trading floor is like a pit of animals. They think in very short terms. Well, this happened 10 minutes ago. Buy! This happened 4 minutes ago. Sell! They move that stock price up and down and up and down. And there is a process over a long period of time. In mathematics, in probability theory, we call it mean reverting. In other words, over a period of time, it will go up and down, but there will still be this always. It will try eventually, over long periods of time, it will be bouncing around some value. That value that it is bouncing around is intrinsic value. It's intrinsic value. It's not, I mean, you'll probably not see it maybe once in a blue moon. Well, that stock's market price is the intrinsic value. Well, my God. Well, nah, it's going to be either above it or below it in any given typical day. That's where I come in. That's where a lot of traders, day traders, but serious investors, we look at a stock and we say, we have an idea of the intrinsic value. We've done the math and we know where it should want to tend towards. Okay, we've done this little stuff that we're going to do here. It's not hard math. It's arithmetic and just some formulas, kind of monkey see, monkey do. But we do that. Okay, intrinsic value right now looks like it's around $20 a share. Okay, this stock is now floating at about $24 a share. That means with respect to intrinsic value, the market price is an overvaluation. This stock is overvalued. How long will it be like that? Well, maybe for a day, maybe for a month, maybe even longer than that. But we do know that if all of the professionals are using best practices, they will, over a period of time, tend to create a pressure back toward the mean. The traders who are the animals, buy, sell, they will move it over short periods of time. But if I see a stock that is overvalued, and these investment houses and investment groups that do intrinsic value valuation, we will start dumping that stock from our portfolios. We'll just keep selling it out. Short selling probably isn't going to be a good idea because, like I said, overvaluation and undervaluation, they can linger. And I mean, if you're short selling stock, you've got to be in and out within a period of some days, or you're going to get creamed on your interest and all that kind of stuff. And you're going to freaking cover to close. All that. But if it's over a period of time, we're going to just keep seeing that 24, 25, 23, 24. And we're just going to quietly just keep unloading that stock from portfolios and not buying it back. So there will be a pressure downward. Ultimately, the traders are going to notice that, and then they're going to start, well, I'll be darned, this price just seems to keep going down, so maybe we should follow the herd, which oftentimes they will, and they'll start selling out, and then that stock will begin to drop below the intrinsic value. Okay, now it's undervalued, so we see that, okay, it's time to buy this stock now. Because it's a bargain at $18 a share to push it back up. Oh, wait, maybe not even $20 because we're a year later, so maybe $21. We're going to just keep buying in, putting demand pressure on that stock, and then over a period of time, bringing the price up. The traders who are just up, down, buy, sell, will begin to notice that, and they'll begin to feed it back across the other way on the mean. But at all times, it is mean reverting. On the downside, buying pressure begins to pull it back up. When it's overvalued, selling pressure begins to push it back down. That's why intrinsic value is useless if you're a day trader. It's worthless if you just pick stocks based on your gut, whether you like the company and you buy the product. This is useless. But we are professionals. We have to operate in ways that are not the ways of the common. And that's one of the problems, of course, is that when you do go to college, to a good college like this one and many others in the United States, we are taking you away from the mass reactions. And we are getting you ready to be either open, visible leaders, or leaders by the examples that you set of professional action in a corporate environment. And that's why, in some ways, look, taking Tesla as an example, as I had said before, Tesla has a lot of company risk. I would not ever buy a stock like that on its own, simply because there is so much risk that would be diversified away if I put it into a big portfolio. On its own, that head of that corporation just creates a lot of noise. We have to look at the underlying intrinsic value of the company, Tesla. And don't look at the personalities involved. We look at hard numbers and figure out what the present value of future expected cash flows to equity are telling us about the price. And when it was up there at $800, we knew damn well that was not an intrinsic value. That was so overvalued that it was ridiculous. And you know what? That overvaluation would have remained for quite some time were it not for the fact that it got swept down with the hurricane of all the other stocks that got swept down. This was unusual. In this case, it had to be beaten down to its intrinsic value or someplace. Whether it's there or not yet, that's remained speculative. But it was certainly overvalued before. You're going to have to excuse me for just a second here, because this is Gabriel, and he thinks that he needs to go outside, and I have to take down the board for this to happen. Say hello, Gabriel. That's right, Gabriel. So bear with me one second while I accommodate this cat and take the board down long enough so the animal can go out into the hallway. Because if I don't do this, he's going to start meowing, and then it's going to disrupt my lecture, and then I will be unhappy. Gabriel, you want out here. Go. Out. And don't want to come back in right away. That's really irritating. It's a cat thing, I know. Where the hell was I? Oh, yes, I was putting my stupid board back up again. There. I knew that was going to happen. I knew he was going to do that just to irritate me. He was going to wait in here. Where the hell was I? Oh, okay. Now, with all of that as backdrop on this happy affair, we get down to some numbers. Here's the thing, and I've mentioned this before, valuing a private corporation is difficult for a couple of reasons. One is that a private corporation, this private corporation would like to sell me some private stock. There are exemptions under securities regulations that allow a company to sell stock without filing all this paperwork with the SEC. Now, that stock is not freely tradable. These owners are going to be part of the company they can't get out from under their investments very easily at all, unless the company subsequently goes public and registers this formerly private stock, what we call restricted stock, Rule 144 stock, a founder stock, whatever. But now, if I am a private investor and they're offering me a 10% stake in the company, 10% of this company's stock, which is restricted, and I have to figure out, okay, what is the value of this stock? Let's say there are 1,000 shares outstanding, and they're offering me 100 shares, okay? Now, what they're going to say is, well, I'm going to say, okay, how much do you need for those 100 shares? And they'll say, well, we're thinking about $50,000. $50,000 for 100 shares, that's $500 a share. Okay, and I would have 10% of the company. I would certainly be a minority shareholder, so I couldn't have much say. I wouldn't be able to control the company because the majority is still, say there are 500 shares already in the hands of the owners, the founders of the company. So I've got to figure out if this 100 shares, 10% stake in the company is worth it. Is this a fair valuation? Is it a good deal? Is it a bad deal? And that actually is not that easy because I'm going to need financial statements. Now, a lot of companies wouldn't necessarily have audited financial statements. They've had their bookkeeper do them but they haven't had an independent outside accounting firm go through and say, yes, these are made in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles consistently applied and all that. So I'd probably insist on those audited those financial statements to get audited. And then I would just bust through those. I'd do what I've shown you. Get it down to the NOPAT, free cash flow, calculate the free cash flow, and then take the present value of projected free cash flows for a bunch of years, bring them back to the present, and that would be the present value of all the equity in the corporation. So I take 10% of that and say, okay, that 10%, let's say that the total value that we get for this corporation is $750,000. Okay, 10% of that is $75,000, and they're going to offer me 10% for $50,000? Deal. But on the other hand, if I find out the audited, doing the free cash flow to equity analysis tells me that the total value of the corporation is $400,000, okay, and they're offering me a 10% stake for $50,000? Nope, can't do it. Private corporations are difficult to value that way. And I had mentioned that one of my big jobs in teaching the teaching ministry officials from countries in West Africa is to show them how to value private companies that the government is considering putting a stake in to help these companies get on their feet and start growing and then spin it off later, showing them the different ways to value the stock of a corporation and all that. There are quite a few barriers to doing this, and some of them are just downright cultural barriers. We can't ask this company to show us its financial statements because that shows a distrust. Yeah, and that's wrong because, and then they explain, well, that's just not how we do it. Well, you got to do it that way because if you want to bring in money from outside so that you can use it to invest in these companies, those outside investors are going to come from places like China, Saudi Arabia, Russia, the United States, Canada, Japan. And they are damn well going to want those financial statements. And they are going to want to have them audited by their chosen accounting firms. It gets kind of difficult. You're sort of having to slowly move them in to this Western capitalism type of thinking over a period of training sessions that come and go. Right now, no one's going anywhere, so those are on hold until we have a sufficient number of people not dying from this virus. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. Pricing. If we got let's say that we do have a public corporation. It has transparency. It has to file documents all the time with the SEC. And if it lies, because nowadays with Sarbanes-Oxley and things like that, the officers and the directors have to sign those documents swearing that they are the truth. If these companies lie, there are enormous penalties, both financial and in terms of prison sentences. So we have a reliance on these public documents to represent as fairly and reasonably as possible the true state of the corporation. However, again, remember that these are done by accountants. And we in finance, we who actually value the corporation, have to alter these, have to move things out, move things in, so that we go from what accountants care about, which is profit, to what the real world and the financial people care about. That's free cash flow. Again, just to emphasize this, a company can be profitable for years, right up to the year that it goes into bankruptcy and dies. On the other hand, a company can have negative profit, in other words, losses. And we in finance will say, oh, darn, this is a decent investment. Why would we do that? Simply because as the stock may be undervalued. Yes, it's losing money, but the current market trading environment has overreacted to that loss and has beaten it down into the ground. And I know damn well that the ground isn't where that value is. I will give you a specific example. I won't name the company, but there was one company that was not a huge company. It was one you might not have even heard of, that's been in the race for a vaccine. There are several who are in the race that are in the race for a vaccine for the for the coronavirus, the COVID-19, SARS-2, as I believe they call it. So you see, yeah, these companies are losing money. They're pouring money into R&D. They're busting their butts. And so I would be surprised if they were making a profit these days. So, of course, the market just boom, pound, 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 down in the ground. Bad company making the cray-cray traders. But thinking about it and saying, okay, if even if they're not the first, I got lined up four companies. Even if any one of them wasn't the first with a vaccine, doesn't matter. The minute they say we've got a vaccine, we've taken it through the expedited trial, it works, that stock is going to go right through the roof. So in other words, intrinsic value, the expected value of future expected cash flows, is certainly a lot different from its current position having earnings that are negative. And damn straight, buying it, to give you one, buying call options, at $20 a piece, my valuation was a little higher. Zach's was valuing the company at about $33 a share, using what I'm going to show you. But the traders, no. $20 a share, that's too much. Well, as soon as this company started getting press, oh yeah, we're now working in trials with the World Health Organization on our vaccine. Suddenly, those traders who had been seeing people like me and many, many other professionals taking long positions in call options, they found Jesus and they started buying that. And they pushed that. I had a strike price of 20. That stock went to about 33 on its first run up. Ah, there you go. So, and then, interestingly enough, well, one company got out of the news because then another company went into the news. So all of these traders, well, it's that company over there. Sell this company. Go over there. Squirrel. So that company's stock price went back down. And so I bought again, and it went back up as soon as it was realized, okay, these are all companies that are working on the same thing. They're just using different methods. And it may be the case that we won't have one vaccine or two vaccines, we might come out with four vaccines, five vaccines, all of which work. And that means that we can then have essentially an inventory to deploy if the coronavirus, this COVID-19, mutates. Because we'll have four different attacks on it. Four different attack vectors, I should say. Okay, now enough about that. But you understand that what we are after is where it will eventually be. I look at you right now, and I say, oh yeah, these are young, crazy people. Well, yeah, he was, you know, found drunk in a very compromising place, but I know he'll be better someday. And then you over there, you're going to be, you're going to do strange things. You're going to go on Instagram and go, and you, sir, I'm sure that there are going to be times when you are at a party and you are blottoed and you don't know the silly stuff and the embarrassing stuff that you're doing. We work past that. We ask, okay, where is the intrinsic value? Oh, yeah, it's up there somewhere. Now, if you burn down a house and, you know, cause death and dismay and things like that, we're going to value you down in financial terms. But we are looking more at long run. What is the long run mean reverting value? Hence, what we do first is we say, please tell me this company pays a dividend, because that is the easiest darn model in the world. It's a formula that is so easy. It's like I don't even put it into Excel. I just do it on a calculator. It's so easy. I can find the price of a stock. This is called the constant dividend growth model. And all it says is that the price of the stock now should be the dividend one period out, divided by the capital, the weighted average cost of capital of the company, minus the growth rate of the dividends. Now, this would be the constant, if the company has gotten to a point where it has constant growth of the dividends. Most companies don't early on. They have dividends, that are blah, 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 blah. So no dividend, then a dividend, then no dividend, then a bigger dividend, then a lower dividend. It has to be when the company's dividend has stabilized to a constant growth pattern. A more mature company, we can value this method. One thing I have to point out, notice that I'm pricing it now, but you need, excuse me, what the hell was that? Oh, that tuna casserole is not working. Okay, this is the dividend that has just been paid, grown one period, one plus G. So watch it how I ask this. If I say the dividend that was just paid was 30 cents and it will grow by 5%, then you would take that dividend that I just gave you and grow it by the 5%, one period, one plus 5%. But if I say they expect to pay a dividend next year of, well, then I have been given the D1 and I don't do that part. I cannot emphasize this little thing right here enough. You are pricing one period behind the dividend that you use. That's going to be important for something that I do next. It's called horizon value. You see, if I have a company that is paying dividends, I can price it anyway by just taking the present value of each one of those stupid dividends and bringing it back to the present for however many years, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. It gets tedious. Excel can certainly help that a lot. Even your TI-83-84 can do it. You set up a table, even in there you can do it. But it's still kind of a pain in the backside because you're having to take the present value of each of these unstable dividends. There's a variation on this, though. You see, a lot of companies, when they're young, their dividends are unstable. They'll pay a 50 cent a share dividend, then maybe the next year a 75 cent. Then year three, they're like, we don't have any money for a dividend this time. Then they'll have some money and they'll pay a 40 cent dividend. But many, many corporations try their best to eventually stabilize the growth, stabilize the dividend, and then get it to grow at a constant rate after that stabilization. When I first started doing this kind of stuff, teaching it, I sort of thought, well, this is kind of an abstract. Maybe I can find a company that's got a constant growth rate dividend. And I started looking at these dividends. Okay, the dividend 3 years ago divided by the dividend 2 years ago, well, that was 2.6%. The dividend 2 years ago divided by the dividend 1 year ago, that was 2.58%. The dividend last year, the dividend this year divided by the dividend last year, that's 2.65%. I realized that, and I started looking at other companies, their dividend performance year over year, and these older companies, I'll be darned if they didn't have stable growth. Now, it was a little bit off. What you usually do is you take an average. If it's just bobbling around some growth rate that's obviously they're targeting, you just take the average of those dividends. I'll be darned. Companies really do this. They work toward that time when they can create a stability in their dividends that gives investors a confidence in the dividend that they will get from the company by investing in it. That reduces the risk of the company. It opens it up to more kinds of investors, more conservative investors. This is a dividend stock, and it's a dividend that we are pretty sure is going to grow at this constant rate for a very long period of time. That creates confidence, and that's what a lot of them do. Gabriel, by the way, is now actually, I know he's out there. I can feel that cat. He's right there. Hi, Gabriel. Anyway, I'll be with you in just a chill, cat, chill. Snackies, I have snackies. We'll both eat the snackies here in just a few minutes. My God, it's hot in this room. I mean, I started going and it's just like, if I had A1 steak sauce, I would probably be a lot more comfortable right now roasting in my own fat. Where the hell was I? Maybe this is that COVID virus. Don't you get a fever with that thing? Anyway, where the hell was I? Okay. So here's the outline of what we want to do with this thing. Say that you had a dividend. Stream that looked like this. The dividend one period out. There's no, okay, let's say that there's a dividend right here. It's going to pay the first dividend it ever did. Let's say that dividend is $1.25. Then next year, it's, things are, we need that money to plow back into the company because we're doing all this cool stuff. So we're going to pay a dividend of only 50 cents in year two. Then we're going to try to get back on track and do a dividend of $1. And then we're going to get a dividend of $1.50. And at that point, we will be able to grow the dividend at a modest rate forever after that of 2.5%. So what that means here is that if I were to say, okay, I'm going to take that dividend of $1.50 and I am going to times it by 1 plus 0.025. That means that $1.50 times 1.025 is 1.5375. Okay. The value right here, let me put it this way. The price right here is going to be that D1 right there divided by the R minus the growth rate. And R, let's say, the cost of capital of the company is, let's say, 8%, okay? We get that from the CAPM or something like that. Okay. I now, remember, D1 buys us that. That's 5, that's 4. Now, I'm going to do that valuation, 1.5375. That's the D1 divided by the cost of capital, 8.08. You've got to use the actual decimal for the formula, minus the growth rate of 0.025. Now, I'm going to get that value of the corporation, that price right there. And I'll do another one of these. So I'm going to take this divided by, open parenthesis, 1.5375, open parenthesis, 0.08 minus 0.025, close the parenthesis, equals. And there we go. the price of the company's stock right there at year four, the price that represents the value forever after that is $27.95. This number, $27.95, it's called the horizon value. The horizon. Out there on the horizon at year four. Now remember, you use five to get four. That's how the formula works. It's from math. So now I can take the present value 1 year of $1.25 plus the present value from 2 years of 50 cents plus the present value of 3 years, a dollar, plus the present value 4 years of $27.95, and I've got the price of the stock right now using the horizon value and those turbulent dividends before it comes to its horizon, when it stabilizes as a mature company with a constant growth rate. Now I'll do a few more of these, or at least I'm going to finish this one the next time. But for right now, I'm running out of time. And remember, tomorrow I have some office hour from noon until 1. I send out a link to that meeting shortly before the office hour begins. It's just on Zoom. It's not recorded. And you can come in there and just live the dream with me. Just hang out. Ask questions. Don't ask complicated questions. Like, what do I do with my life? I'll tell you what you'll do with it. You'll stay inside like I will. I don't want you dying before this course finishes, because that makes a very difficult thing with the incomplete. And then I have to evaluate you after 6 weeks. And how am I going to do that? Okay. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.